That's my home. I need to protect it.
She says that is one of the motivations for a daring escape from Hong Kong police. This is Thursday, November 21st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also coming your way, you will hear from a legendary figure in Hong Kong and what he thinks of what has happened in his city. Also, we will talk with VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson about the continuing hearings in Washington. The standoff between police and protesters at a Hong Kong university entered its fourth day Wednesday, with a group of holdouts still refusing to surrender. One student protester who was able to flee the campus described a dramatic getaway. She's now deciding whether to flee Hong Kong or stay and continue protesting, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports. It's
night after night, students flee a university that's turned into a battlefield. Most are forced to turn back by tear gas and rubber bullets. Others are caught and face years in jail. This is one of the few who did escape.
I'm scared. Really scared.
A student now on the run from her own government.
This place, that's my home. I need to protect it.
She's part of a hardcore group of students who are increasingly willing to go beyond peaceful protests to fight for democratic reform. Last week, students barricaded themselves on campus and stockpiled homemade weapons to battle police.
The rioters' actions have far exceeded the call for democracy. They are now the enemy of the people.
But this student has no problem being labeled a radical.
Radical, I think, is a positive word for me, for us. Most revolution will have violence.
VOA could not confirm every part of the girl's story, but text messages and witness accounts place her on campus when it was surrounded by police. She describes a daring nighttime escape.
Running, sneaking. Every 10 minutes, we have to stop. And hide and see if there have any police, and then keep walking, keep make attention. It was so terrible, which is, you have to leave in front of the other people's blood.
She eventually made it off campus and into a vehicle driven by a man she didn't even know. She's now considering whether to apply for political asylum in another country, or stay and continue to resist.
We both know that it's impossible to win. Only persistence can bring hope, not wait for it. If we never try, who knows when it's the end.
This semi-autonomous Chinese territory has seen 5 months of anti-government protests, and it's only getting more violent. Bill Gallo, VOA News.
The U.S. Senate easily approved a bill to support human rights in Hong Kong following months of often violent unrest in the semi-autonomous Chinese city. Mitch McConnell is the Senate's majority leader.
Yesterday, the United States Senate spoke up forcefully and clearly for the brave people of Hong Kong. We unanimously passed the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act. As the author of the original United States Hong Kong Policy Act, back in 1992, and somebody who has advocated for Hong Kongers for decades, I was proud to speak out on this back in the summer when the protests began. I was also proud to secure important policy steps for Hong Kong in the State and Foreign Ops Subcommittee, in the State and Foreign Ops Subcommittee back in September. I'm also proud that senators approved these further steps to update the original law to preserve Hong Kong's autonomy and democracy and provide more tools for holding Beijing accountable.
The Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act now goes to the House, which has already passed similar legislation. The bill would mandate sanctions on Chinese and Hong Kong officials who carry out human rights abuses and require an annual review of the favorable trade status that Washington grants Hong Kong. The Senate Majority Leader McConnell said that action might very well be taken quickly.
Even before this new bill becomes law, Congress has already given the administration significant powers to act, including authorities to directly sanction individuals who violate human rights. And I urge every trading nation around the world to look clearly at Hong Kong and at Xinjiang and imagine the costs as China continues to entrench its surveillance state and export it all around the world. The Senate continues to do our part. Everyone else must do theirs as well. The United States and the world must stand with Hong Kong.
In Beijing Wednesday, China condemned the passage of the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act and vowed strong countermeasures to safeguard its sovereignty and security. But there was no immediate response from the White House, which is yet to say whether President Trump would approve the Hong Kong rights bill. A U.S. official said recently that no decision had been made, but the unanimous Senate vote, could make a veto more difficult for the Republican president. An official who spoke on condition of anonymity said if the measure got to Mr. Trump's desk, there would probably be an intense debate between Trump aides worried that it could undermine trade talks with China and those who believe it is. As we continue on VOA Asia, a legendary figure in Hong Kong speaks his mind on the continuing protest there. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. The Thai opposition leader has been convicted and disqualified from parliament. Myanmar's leader Aung San Suu Kyi will lead a team to fight genocide accusations. Rich in dramatic Catholic history, Nagasaki awaits the Pope. Why drones matter so much for China to control the disputed sea. And Vietnamese banks are required to assess environmental and social goals. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. China's top legislature said Hong Kong courts have no power to rule on the constitutionality of legislation under that city's basic law, which includes a proposed ban on face masks. That according to the Chinese state news agency Xinhua. The statement came a day after Hong Kong's High Court ruled that a ban on wearing face masks during public demonstrations that have rocked the financial hub for more than five months was unconstitutional. A spokesman for the Legislative Affairs Commission of the Standing Committee of the National People's Congress said in a statement, whether the laws of the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region comply with the Basic Law of Hong Kong can only be judged and decided by the Standing Committee of the National People's Congress. Embattled Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam proposed enacting a ban on wearing face masks as the pro-democracy demonstrations escalated. Protesters had been using masks to hide their identities in public. Hong Kong's High Court ruled Monday that colonial-era emergency laws, which were revived to justify the mask ban, were incompatible with the Basic Law, the mini-constitution under which Hong Kong was returned to China in 1997. Former parliamentarian and the founding chairperson of the United Democrats, Hong Kong's first political party, Martin Lee, played a leading role in the group that drafted the Basic Law that specified the fundamental constitutional rights and freedoms of Hong Kong citizens when the former British territory was handed back to China in 1997. In an exclusive interview with VOA, Lee explained that Beijing does not have the right to overrule the Hong Kong court.
When the Chinese government resumed the exercise of sovereignty over Hong Kong on the 1st of July 1997, then this situation is completely covered by our mini-constitution, the Basic Law.
Yeah.
And the Basic Law gives Hong Kong a high degree of autonomy. So the legislative power, together with the executive and judicial powers, were all given to Hong Kong. But as far as the power to legislate is concerned, it is quite clearly provided in the Basic Law that only the Legislative Council can enact a law or amend a law or repeal a law. No other body in Hong Kong can do that.
Lee also told VOA that the government of both Hong Kong and China hold responsibility for the current turmoil.
Hong Kong has become a police state. It is pretty clear now to everybody living here that the government is not in control of the police. They can do anything they like without fear of prosecution, even though they commit criminal offences. And they have the support not only of the government, but also the Beijing government to use violence on the protesters.
However, Martin Lee does not condone violence on the part of some of the protesting people, although he understands what has occurred. He at least partially blames Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam.
If she keeps on saying no to the Independent Commission of Inquiry, no to democracy, and they tell the demonstrators, stop first, stop all the violence first, and then she doesn't even promise, and then what? Mm-hmm. She doesn't even say, and then we'll sit down and talk about these issues. She doesn't even say that. And these demonstrators will say, well, we have seen what happened to Martin Lee and supporters. They've been fighting for democracy for 35 years, and they were being ignored all the time. So once we stop, we'll be ignored too. So I'm not sympathizing with the use of violence, but I can understand why they continue to protest. I hope they will continue to protest peacefully.
Our thanks to Yinan Wang of VOA's Mandarin service, who conducted the interview with Martin Lee in Hong Kong. Happening now in Asia, Indian authorities say normalcy has returned in most areas in Indian Kashmir, where New Delhi imposed a widespread clampdown after scrapping the Himalayan region's semi-autonomous status in August. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. U.S. diplomat Gordon Sondland emphatically told the impeachment inquiry targeting President Donald Trump Wednesday that despite the president's denial, there was a conditional deal in recent months that Ukraine would not get the military aid it wanted unless it opened investigations to benefit Trump politically. Sondland, the American ambassador to the European Union, told the House Intelligence Committee that impeachment investigators have frequently framed these complicated issues in the form of a simple question: was there a quid pro quo? And as I testified previously, he said the answer is yes. He also said President Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, was carrying out the wishes of the president.
Mr. Giuliani's requests were a quid pro quo for arranging a White House visit for President Zelensky. Mr. Giuliani demanded that Ukraine make a public statement announcing the investigations of the 2016 election DNC server and Burisma. Mr. Giuliani was expressing the desires of the President of the United States, and we knew these investigations were important to the president.
Catherine Gibson, VOA's congressional correspondent, joins us in studio. That seemed to be, at least with his opening statement revealed to the press before those proceedings began this morning, that seemed to be almost a bullet fired directly at the Republicans. And it didn't totally turn out that way, did it? Or how are you going to put that?
At least in the context of this past week and a half of the impeachment hearings up on Capitol Hill, it did come across as a bullet fired right at the Republicans. And by the end of the day, they had managed to work their way back up towards their argument that, look, Sondland did say that there was a quid pro quo, But he was actually basing what he said on some presumptions. They were able to chip away at what he was saying by arguing that he had only talked to Trump a handful of times and that he was presuming that Rudy Giuliani was acting on the direct orders of the president. That's an argument that we're going to see a lot more in the coming days.
It seemed at least early to be somewhat docile as far as the hearings were concerned, but you were there. It didn't turn out that way all the way, did it?
No, it certainly did not, especially when one of the top, you know, arguers on the House Republican side, Jim Jordan, got going. He is really their attack dog. He can go after witnesses. He knows what he's doing when he gets in that spotlight. And he went after Sondland. I think he had some effective arguments, you know, making the point that, look, the aid to Ukraine was released. And not only that, he was arguing that that was because the U.S. government had done its due diligence and realized that President Zelensky was a true reformer and would do what was needed to be done with that aid.
Well, do you think the Republicans got their point across? You seem to indicate that in your last sentence there.
Look, as with all things on Capitol Hill, and especially with impeachment, these battle lines are really dug in. And I don't know if these hearings are really changing any minds that hadn't already been made up. Democrats know their argument. Democrats want to see Trump, you know, come be held to account for his abuse of power, what they say is an abuse of power. Republicans say that this is ridiculous and make the president's argument that it's a witch hunt against him.
Well, this does not, whatever the conclusion of this set of hearings, it will not do anything as far as Donald Trump staying in the White House, right?
Well, look, we know that more than likely articles of impeachment will come up for a vote in the U.S. House, most likely by the end of the year. And because it's controlled by Democrats, they will pass those articles of impeachment. It's when we get to that trial in the U.S. Senate that it gets a little bit trickier. And we'll have to see if some of the Republican senators who have expressed concerns about the president in private are willing to go on public record and vote against him.
But so far, no indication of that happening in the Republican-controlled Senate, right?
Not so far. That is very, very true.
Catherine Gibson is the VOA congressional correspondent who probably is going to return to the Capitol down the street here now and stay there all night long.
Right? I think that sounds like a plan.
All right, Catherine, thanks.
Sure.
Coming up, there might be a way to save the disease-ridden pig population. Sorry about that segue. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Thick smoke from wildfires in Australia are lingering over Sydney and its surrounding areas, prompting health experts to warn people with medical conditions to remain indoors. Local media reports that the air quality in some parts of Sydney exceeded hazardous levels. You're listening to VOA Asia. Let's stay in Australia, where scientists say it could be another 5 years before a vaccine is developed to protect pigs from African swine fever. Phil Mercer in Sydney tells us estimates say a quarter of the world's pig population, the pig population, has died this year following the deadly outbreak of the virus in China.
African swine fever, or ASF, has yet to reach Australia, but it is close. The virus has been spreading rapidly through Asia, and outbreaks have been reported in East Timor, one of Australia's closest neighbours. The disease is devastating pig populations in several countries. It's highly contagious, and there is no cure. Scientists have been working on a vaccine for 60 years, but because the African swine fever virus is so large and complex, it is an immense task. At the Australian Animal Health Laboratory in the state of Victoria, researchers are hopeful of a breakthrough, but concede an effective treatment for ASF could be at least 5 years away. The laboratory's director is Dr. Trevor Drew.
I don't think I ever really expected African swine fever to spread with such ferocity. I think we will not be able to control African swine fever until there is a vaccine available.
Without a vaccine, Australia will rely on traditional methods of disease control should ASF reach its shores. Infected pigs would be culled, their carcasses buried, and farms disinfected. Australia's multi-million dollar pork industry includes about 2,700 producers, which employ 34,000 people. There are concerns the disease could spread through Australia's large feral pig population. It numbers about 25 million, and the animals are spread across almost half the country. Scientists say the most likely way ASF could enter Australia is through infected pork products that are then fed to pigs. Under new biosecurity laws, Australia is deporting tourists who fail to declare illegal pork products. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
A news break from VOA Asia. In golf, the European Tour, in conjunction with its co-sanctioning partner at the Asian Tour, has announced it will postpone the Hong Kong Open tournament because of ongoing street protest. Set to tee off November 28th at the Hong Kong Golf Club, no new date has been announced. You are in tune with VOA Asia. U.S. Democrats hold their fifth presidential debate a short time from now in Atlanta, Georgia. 10 Democratic contenders will debate each other in a presidential race that of late has been largely overshadowed by the impeachment drama in Washington involving President Trump. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the Democratic race from Washington.
It will be another crowded debate stage in Atlanta with 10 Democrats vying for the spotlight. The two leading contenders, former Vice President Joe Biden and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, will be center stage. But one candidate drawing extra attention at the moment is South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Polls show Buttigieg has surged into a lead in Iowa, the state that will kick off the caucus and primary voting in February.
The more voters hear my message, the more supportive they become, and the more we're able to grow our base.
Biden continues to lead in national polls and argues he would be the strongest candidate to take on President Trump next year.
Let me say this. Whomever among us ends up being the nominee for the Democratic Party, the next president is going to inherit two things for certain. A nation that's divided and a world in disarray.
Warren also remains near the top of the Democratic field, but finds herself on the defensive of late over her sweeping plan for a government health care program, Medicare for All.
Come caucus for me and come fight alongside me, because this is our time to dream big, to fight hard, and to win.
One new Democratic contender who will not be in the debate is former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick, who announced last week that he was entering the race.
This campaign, and I think, is an opportunity to bring people together.
Also, former New York City mayor and billionaire Michael Bloomberg may join the race as well. The entry of additional candidates raises questions about the current field of contenders, says analyst Larry Sabato.
It's obvious many Democratic leaders are very worried about the top echelon. Each of the candidates has problems. Too old, too young, over-experience, under-experience, and then too far left, too far right, you name it.
Eight other contenders will be on stage for the Atlanta debate, including Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, California Senator Kamala Harris, Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, and New Jersey Senator Cory Booker. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Remember to get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, download our podcast, and take VOA Asia with you. Visit our VOAnews.com program page as well. See us on YouTube, follow us on VOA Asia Twitter, and let's hear from you. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, and our managing editor, Diane Gao, along with our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hayoung, Afra, and Candace. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.